Hello and welcome to the 42's GAA Weekly Podcast. Gary Doyle here, and on today's pod, we are talking again about David Clifford and his X Factor appeal. We're talking David Moran and his quest for one last tilt at glory with Cairns O'Reilly's. But as well as that, there's a vivid reflection on the life of one of Irish sport's greatest characters, Paddy O'Shea, ahead of the 10th anniversary of his passing. To help us do that, we're joined by Paddy's nephew, Mark O'Shea, 5 times All-Ireland winner, 3 times All-Star, former Footballer of the Year, most importantly of all, a new dad. Mark, our congratulations. Hope everything's good. How are you and how is little Tommy?
He's great, Gary. We're blessed. We've another addition to the family and he's doing great. He was born last week on Wednesday. Last Wednesday week. So he's nearly 2 weeks old now at this stage, and he's sleeping well and he's drinking well. So like I say, he's a typical O'Shea. He's doing very well, thanks be to God. And you know, we're delighted. Everything, his mom and himself, they're all doing great. So we're delighted here at home.
And the older siblings, have they accepted him, or are they already jealous?
Yeah, they are indeed. His uncle Tomás, who is yet to visit him, by the way, claims that he was named after him. He's wrong, in fact, by Uncle Tom, who passed away last year. We named him after Tom, but Tomás is definitely claiming it. So knowing Tomás, he's obviously chuffed the fact that we called him Tommy. Slightly different to the Moss, but it's the same name. But it's a long-standing name in the O'Shea family. Actually, my grandfather, Tommy O'Shea, met my grandmother Beatrice in Sligo from Sligo in London years ago, and then my dad and my uncle Tom and Paddy were born, and then obviously, as I said, my uncle Tom, and then there was Tomás. So now we've Tommy. So we 4 generations of the same name. So it is nice to continue the tradition and of the name.
Brilliant. And he's sleeping well?
He's sleeping well, yeah. He gets up all right in the middle of the night. But look, sure, that's not to be expected. But look, he's healthy, thanks be to God. And Ellen is healthy, so all is good.
And are you sleeping well, or is a certain chap called David Clifford been haunting
your dream? I'm not sleeping too well, but sure, look, isn't that part of the package, Gary? We'll put up with it for a few more weeks. And it's a nice time of the year, actually, because you're coming into Christmas and a newborn in the house. And the nights are long, so it's nice to be at home. And of course, I'm off for 2 weeks from work, which is great. So I get to spend more time at home, which is fantastic, and really enjoying it at the moment. Thanks be to God.
Good stuff. The last time we're chatting to you, you're preparing your Lestroy team for the Kerry final against Fossa. Fossa only happened to have a certain player called David Clifford on their side, and the squeeze passed you in extra time. Clifford got 212 of Fossa's tally. Yeah. How's it been? How have you been?
Oh my God, where do I start, Gary? Do you know what? Look, I remember the previous game that they played against Dartford. A colleague of mine who was playing, he said, we should have beaten them. We should have beaten them. And, you know, look, that's the way it should have beaten them. And we missed so much. And after the final, I have the same message. We should have beaten them, and we didn't. And we were a few pints up going down the stretch. Ironically enough, David Clifford was going for a pint. It dropped short. His brother Paddy went for a fist. Ball went into the back of the net. That gave them the momentum they needed. We went down the other end of the field, got another pint to put us a pint ahead. And in fairness to Fossa, back down the field again. And Clifford, look, and we had all the plans for him. And believe it or not, the players we had on him did quite well on him. But just he's just... different classes, Jimmy McGee once said, and that's what he is. He's just different class. He's got it all. And some of the points that he kicked in Fitzgerald Stadium were just incredible. There was one point he kicked that it looked as though it was going over the stand, and just the way it curled back in, frightening stuff. And he's just an unnatural talent. We're just lucky that he's from this county, you know. But he's phenomenal, like going into extra time then, it was always, I felt, even though you go back in from a Fossa point of view, they probably had the momentum because they got the lifeline with the goal. Then they go into extra time. We had the game won, and then all of a sudden it's taken from you. So I was trying to get my fellas to kind of calm and realize we're still in this or this game. Okay, we didn't do it at full time, but we can still do it at extra time. But unfortunately, I suppose two of our intercounty players, Ronan Buckley, who's back in the intercounty setup again, and Rory Murphy, who was in the Kerry under 20s, both those players were sitting down for the extra time period, where the two Cliffords were on fire. And that was the difference ultimately. And look, David Clifford, I think we said it before in the last podcast, you make so many plans for this guy, but sure, look, they go out the window, really, don't they?
What's it like knowing, Mark, that this guy's going to be like a complete star for Kerry, for your county, the county you represented with such pride for another decade? So you know in your heart of hearts that he's going to make you happy at some stage down the line. But when you're standing there on the sideline and he's ruining your day, what is that contradiction like?
Ah, look, when you're on the wrong end of it, it's horrible, because you just know this guy is just a freak of nature. He's just so good. And like, somebody described him there lately to me that he's a kind of a cross between Donaghy and the Gooch. And when you think about it, he's every bit as big as Donaghy, but he's got all the skills of the Gooch. So when you've got a guy inside there who's got target man, he can win his own ball, he can kick his own ball left and right. It's just frightening. And I heard a good story actually about him lately after the All-Ireland. They were the Kerry captain, Joe O'Connor, who's from Austin Stacks. They had a do in Connolly Park, which is Austin Stacks club, the home club of the captain, Joe O'Connor. And they were having a few pints inside in the local pub, and in came the Bomber Liston. And there was a few of the Kerry lads around there, and Bomber turned to Clifford and he said, he gave him the wink and he says, we'll tell the boys that full forward is the hardest position to play. And David Clifford turned to Bomber and he says, 'twas easy for you. He says, I mean, when I'm playing inside full forward, there's two sweepers, he says, marking me every time. He says, so I don't know what you're talking about, he says to Bomber. And Bomber, who's usually the life and soul of the party and the centre of attention, there wasn't a word out of him for the rest of the night. So like fighting the Bomber.
But well, he's the only person who got out in the Bomber. You didn't.
He's the only person.
Certainly no one did in the 70s or 80s.
I know. Yeah.
At the weekend, he was playing in the Munster Junior semi-final. The venue was sold out. And by all accounts, there was a lot more than the 1,500 people who had tickets for it that got in there. We really are talking about a guy with X-factor superstar appeal. And because Fossa are now in the Munster final, he is only able to join the rest of the Kerry squad who are flying out to Dubai and Mauritius on their county holiday. At this stage, should the Kerry County board just fork out a few quid and give Clifford and his partner a holiday, given absolutely everything that he has given the GAA this season?
I'd imagine they'd have to. I think, you know, in the past, that's what was done. If you didn't go on the holiday, you would get compensated in some way. But this guy, he's, I won't say single-handedly won the All-Ireland for Kerry, but I mean, he was one of the main reasons Kerry won the All-Ireland. So I would imagine, and look, you see, where I feel sorry for David Clifford is, this guy is going since January, you know, and even before that, he's going solid 12 months, and he's going to be going longer. So the worry I'd have for David Clifford is in maybe, you know, April, May. Jack O'Connor will have to be very mindful of him and make sure that he will have to get a period of time where he just gets a break. Because from a Fossa point of view, they're hopeful. They're obviously in a Munster final now. And by all accounts, in Castlemahan, I think the attendance, so I was listening to Radio Kerry today, the attendance I'm told was 1,500, but the commentator was saying there was far more than that there. There was fellas there with Dublin jerseys. People travelled down as far as Monaghan, by all accounts, to watch him. And just even after the game, the crowds of people that were there just trying to get photographs with the guy. And that's bound to take its toll on someone as young as that. And to be fair to him, he's obviously a very mature guy to be able to burden all that on his shoulders, because he's still young. I know he's a young dad, but he's still very young. I think he's only 23 and he's achieved so much. So you'd love to think that at some stage himself and his partner will get to go away on a much deserved holiday. But the way things are working, it's probably only going to be maybe after Christmas that's an option, because he's just too busy. He's just finished with East Kerry winning the county championship, and now he's with Fossa, and he's in the Munster final. So it's a hard one for him, you know, because like everyone is pulling out of him, really, you know, and that's a tough place to be. But he has performed so well, and he doesn't let the side down, and he's obviously a very strong, steely, tough character, as is his brother Paddy. You know, their dad Dermot is the chairman of the club in Fossa. They're real GA people. I work with their uncle Fergus, and just that's what they are. They're GA to the core. There was talks a few years ago that he was going off to Australia playing AFL. That was never going to happen, I don't think. This man was born to play with Kerry and win All-Ireland, and thankfully now we're seeing that, and it's great. As you said, we're delighted he's from Kerry.
What would you recommend, about a 6-week break for him whenever Fossa's campaign ends?
I don't think he's going to get a 6-week break. I think that would be wishful thinking. But I think he definitely needs 2 to 3 weeks off anyway. Yeah. Total rest, you know. But I mean, if he goes the distance with his club to an All-Ireland, and that's another thing they were talking about today. Obviously, we're kicking our heels in this dry because, you know, if the hardest thing is to try and get out of your county, you get out of your county, anything is possible. Winning a Munster championship, going on. And, you know, the hardest thing is to get out of your county. You get out of that, you have a great opportunity. And that's like, there's talks already of that if David Clifford could get his club, Fossa, to an All-Ireland club final, that you'd have the biggest crowd ever inside in Croke Park for an All-Ireland club final. And this is only junior premier level. So that in itself is saying something. If you got Fossa to a junior premier final in Croke Park, I'd imagine there would be people queuing up at the gates, the turnstiles, to try and get in and watch him.
I'd imagine so. Another Kerry team who advanced the provincial final over the weekend was Cairns O'Reilly's. They came through a tough semi-final against Clare's Aireoghe with a point to spur, despite their midfielder David Moran getting sent off after 22 minutes. Earlier in his career, Moran, a few people were suggesting, wasn't aggressive enough. Mark, what was your impression of the young David Moran as a player, as a teammate?
It's funny, like, because, yeah, that would be the opinion of David Moran, that he's a clean footballer. He's a great midfielder. He served Kerry very well. I remember one night in training, he was marking my brother Dara, and he was getting the better of Dara in training, and a few high balls came out and David won it. And I suppose Dara averted to plan B and decided to get a bit tough and aggressive, and my ball came out anyway, and Dara's elbow led. And I think there was a tooth missing or whatever, and next thing David was in the A&E, and that was a valuable lesson to David. But look, one of the memories that stands to me about David was recently, a few years back, in the Super 8s. And the Super 8s was great from a point of view that you get a home game, you get an away game, and you get a neutral game. There was a beautiful day in Fitzgerald Stadium, Killarney. Kerry were playing Mayo, and it was the full house packed. It was 30-odd, 5,000, whatever, at the game. And David was at the throw-in, and Aidan O'Shea, and they started the argy-bargy. And David set the tone from that throw-in. You know, he just, you knew he wasn't to be messed with. And I think as the years have gone by, he's certainly added that edge to his game, whereby he's tough. And, you know, and yesterday when I heard, because we had a game ourselves in an O'Donoghue Cup game, so I wasn't at it, but I watched the highlights. But, and I was chatting to a few of the boys, you know, and, you know, I was feeling, maybe was he turning into a Dara, where he was getting towards the end of his career using the dark arts. But it wasn't the case, apparently, you know, that David was very much zoned in on by the Clare boys, and, you know, came in for a bit of rough attention. And I think the two yellow cards were harsh by all accounts. So look, unlucky for David Moran to be sent off the first time in his career. Very unlike him. And I would certainly say that, as I say, I wasn't at the game, but from the few people I spoke to, that the cards, harsh, you know, because, I mean, if you cast your mind back a year ago, around this time a year ago, Cairns O'Reilly's were playing in the county final against Austin Stacks. And, you know, two huge rivalries. I mean, you're talking here now, you're talking Kerry Cork, Liverpool, Man United, Celtic Rangers. That's the rivalry with Cairns O'Reilly's and Aston Stacks. And the two in one town, small town in Tralee, and here the two teams taking on each other. And after 20 minutes, David Moran's game is over because of injury, which kept him out of Kerry for maybe 5 or 6 months. I think it was a groin injury of some sorts. And then yesterday, after 20-something minutes, he's gone again, this time with a red card. So the signs looked ominous for Cairns O'Reilly's going into halftime there yesterday. But thankfully for them, you know, it's wide open now again, because on the other side of it, you had Nemo, who fancied their chances, were beaten by Clonmel. Then you have Clonmel going in, fancying their chances against Newcastle West. And, you know, now you see a fantastic Newcastle West team and Cairns O'Reilly's. You could not, the bookies would never have predicted these two teams. But from a Cairns O'Reilly's point of view, you know, it's interesting to listen to their coach, William Harmon. They have three players at the moment, two in Dubai. I think there was one in New York, Gavin O'Brien. Two players in Dubai, Cormac Coffey, who would have been a Kerry minor in 2014, Kerry under 21, decent footballer, one of their go-to man markers. And of course, Jack Savage, who the Kerry panelist, who came on as a blood sub in the All-Ireland final against Galway this year. So these players are abroad. They're training away abroad in Dubai and they're flown home for the games. So it's an interesting strategy. William Harmon, their coach, is happy to go along with it. And the players are happy to go along with it. I think from a Cairns O'Reilly's point of view, they're most certainly in bonus territory. Because in Kerry, as everyone knows, it's such a complicated championship. You've got the county championship and then you've got the club championship. In the county championship, they were abysmal. They, you know, just everything went against them. In contrast to last year where they got to the final and then all of a sudden in the final things went against him, but this year everything went against him. Tommy Walsh was injured, they had a good few injuries, and their county championship was very poor. Whereas in contrast, they had 6 weeks break for the likes of Tommy Walsh, these guys to come back. Now all of a sudden they've got a full team to pick from again, so that bit of time actually suited them, whereas momentum in the county championship suited other teams. It didn't suit Cairns O'Reilly's, but now they've got a full team to choose from and they're in a Munster final, which, as I say, I think they're in bonus territory, and there's only 8 teams left in the competition now. So I think they've a great chance of winning a Munster title. And, you know, it'd be great for the likes of David Moran and Tommy Walsh and these guys. You know, you've got Jack Savage, you've got Barry John Keane, ex-Kerry panellist, who's on the panel as well. So they have quality players on the team who were match winners on a given day. Tommy got a goal yesterday and a point and was the difference, I believe. So, you know, it's when you've players like that to call on, Gary, it's going to be hard to beat them.
What do you think it would mean to David? He's won 2 All-Irelands, he's won 10 Munster Senior Football Championships. What do you think a Munster club title would mean to him?
Oh yeah, I think it would mean the world to him. I think he's at a stage now where he has to make a huge decision in terms of is he going to give Kerry one more year? And we have to remember as well, it's a very needy area for Kerry, because you've your Kerry captain, who I mentioned earlier, Joe O'Connor, who's he's gone for the year with a cruciate ligament injury. So he was a fella who used to be called on off the bench after maybe 45, 50 minutes. So you're down him. So maybe I think Jack O'Connor is going to be saying, number one, to David Moran, listen, we need you again for the following year. Maybe rest him for parts of the league, but obviously bring him back again. Excuse me, rest him for parts of the league, mentioned with David Clifford. But in terms of club championship, I think Tommy has retired. It's going to mean the world to the likes of Tommy Walsh and David Moran to win a Munster club championship medal. I think, you know, I mentioned they're in bonus territory here. They are, but they're playing Newcastle West. Now, Newcastle West have been excellent as well. And having beaten Clonmel Commercials in extra time is going to give them huge spirit, huge drive to and belief, I think, is the big thing from their point of view to go on. And I think, you know, Limerick football is in a good place as well at the moment. All the talk is about the Limerick hurlers, but Limerick football is in a good place as well at the moment. So I think that they'll be very ambitious after beating Nemo of Cork and Clonmel Commercials from Tipperary. But going back to your question, I think it'll mean huge. It'll be very important to David Moore. And David and Tommy are the driving force of that team. So hugely influential, good characters, and, you know, just decent people. So I think, you know, the young fellas in that club will rally around those two lads.
Another decent person, somebody who is very close to you. We're coming up to the 10th anniversary of your uncle Paddy's passing in a couple of weeks. An absolute great, great character, a fun person, first and foremost, Mark. I had the pleasure of interviewing him at the start of my career, and he was hilarious. He was hilarious. I remember he would never give you a good quote, except one time he gave you a good quote. Give me a good quote. It was some controversy at the time, and he said, "When it comes to controversial issues, Gary, my vocabulary is very, very limited." And in a way, that summed him up. In that he knew rightly what he had to say and what he didn't want to say on the record.
Yeah,
you knew him better than most. Can you just tell us what it was like being the nephew of Paddy O'Shea?
Ah, look, it was entertaining. Anyway, I can tell you that he was larger than life. I mean, you know, growing up, it was very interesting because we had a situation where, I suppose, in the Cross, you had the pub across the road where he built in 1985. And then you had so that was the hub of the area. So there was people coming and going there all the time. And so we were lucky growing up, you know, I would have been too young I wouldn't have been born in the 70s. What am I saying? But I would have been too young in the 80s, early 80s. But 84, 85, 86. I would have remembered 85, 86, would have remembered, say, Paddy's year captain. I vaguely remember 85 coming back. Paddy was captain. I remember being hoisted up onto the lorry with the team and holding Sam Maguire. You know, I can still remember that, and joyous occasion. So that was fantastic when Sam Maguire was coming all the time back then, you know, and it was a bit of a famine after that. But I remember as well, like the year Paddy was captain, actually, we got to hold on to the Sam Maguire for, there was only 26 students in the school, in the primary school. It was a rural school. And it was 26 kids in the whole school. Can you imagine that, Gary? I mean, there's 26 kids now in each class nearly, but yeah, 26 kids in the whole school. So there was something like 3 or 4 in my class. So every student would get to bring the Sam Maguire home for a night. There was no demand for the cup whatsoever back then because Kerry were winning it all the time. But yeah, every student, so our house, obviously there was 4 brothers, so we got to have the Sam in our house, for 4 nights. But look, it was great crack. I mean, you go across the road to the pub one day and the ex-Taoiseach Jack Lynch would be there. Paddy was a big man with the politics, loved the politicians. Love to be seen with the politicians, the likes of the Jack Lynch's, big Fianna Fáil man, Charlie Haughey, obviously, Bertie, Brian Cowan. I remember, funny story, actually, myself at the Moss, we were above at the All-Stars one night, and we had our few pints up in the morning, having our breakfast, and next thing, Paddy lands on, and he says, "Come on, lads, we'll go away in the taxi," and we didn't know where we were going, and whisks us off to North Dublin, and out we land in Kinsealy into Charlie Hawley's house, and there we are inside having a cup of tea with Charlie and Mrs. Hawley. And sure, this was Paddy. You could end up anywhere and be in anyone's company, and sure, Paddy would hold his own with any company he was in. And
come here, before you go any further, tell us what Charlie Hawley was like.
He was reading a book as we went in the door.
Actually, never mind. Tell us what Charlie thought he was like. Tell us what Kinsealy was like. What was the inside of the house like?
Actually, funny enough that you say that. That was one of the first my abiding memories as I went in the door, because it was a fantastic house. But as you go in the door, it was a real narrow corridor on the way in, and pictures and photographs of all the revolutionary leaders on either side as you go in the door, and to the left we didn't go to the right. The left was a kind of a bar area, lounge area, and we sat down there. To be totally honest with you, Gary, I said very little to the man. I was obviously courteous and the whole lot, but I was in awe of him and didn't want to say anything. It was Paddy that was doing all the talking, to be totally honest with you, as only Paddy would. But, like, great to be in his company. I was in his company a few times at Paddy, actually. He used to always start the Dingle Regatta, Charlie would, and we gate-crashed an after-party meal after some Kerry game afterwards, and sure, Charlie was only delighted that Paddy was on... that Paddy was in, and Charlie ended up coming back to the pub, and Paddy asked me to fill a pint for the Taoiseach. He kept on calling him the Taoiseach, even though Charlie was well gone at that stage, and go out and fill a pint for the Taoiseach, Mark. So I went in and I filled a beautiful pint, made sure it was perfect, came out with the perfect pint of Guinness, and Paddy had a look at the pint. Sure, how could you give that pint of Guinness to the Taoiseach? Go back in there and I'll do it myself, fill a proper pint. He was only trying to make him feel important, you know, but that was Paddy. But he was, as I say, you know, you could end up in any company. And we ended up in the Arse and Oakderall another day meeting Mary McAleese. And he was just like, he was larger than life. And, you know, and the great thing about Paddy, I'm talking about politicians now, and he did have a great way of luring people in. Tom Cruise was in the pub one day. Dolly Parton was in the pub. Charlie Sheen was in the pub. But like, Paddy would have treated them the exact same as he would have treated the locals. And the locals would have had so much time for Paddy. And, you know, he'd bring some of the locals away. If he was going after Dublin for a weekend, he'd bring some of the locals away with him. He'd always make sure that they were never short of an All-Ireland ticket or whatever it may be. And, you know... So that was the Paddy outside of the whole Kerry thing. You know, when it came to Kerry, it was a completely different Paddy. It was...
Hi.
Oh, he was... Football was number one. He was very serious. Football, he never joked about football. Football was always number one, and you could have great conversations with him about football. He would have been in charge, I suppose. He came in 96. Yes. He would have looked for the job maybe in 91 when Mickey Ned O'Sullivan got it. Paddy didn't get it. Again, he would have looked for it in 93 when Ogie Moran didn't get it. Paddy was overlooked. They may have seen Paddy as maybe a loose cannon or some sort, you know. But he got the job then in 96 or late 95. And
sorry to cut across you, Mark. When people said he was a loose cannon, is that the sort of thing that would have hurt? Because you know the man as a very serious football man. You know him as having a very high football intellect. So for people to use terms like character and loose cannon, in a way, does that undermine his football intelligence?
Yes, it probably would. When I say that, I suppose I'd be quoting Paddy's own words. That he mentioned himself, and I, you know, I've no reason to doubt him when he said that, because you know he was talking possibly from a county board point of view, and having been overlooked for the job twice, and Paddy probably would have seen himself as having had the credentials at the time, winning two county championships with West Kerry as player manager 84-85, and then winning a county championship as a manager in 1990. Possibly felt it was his time to take over. I, you know, funny enough, I think he was lucky he didn't get it that time, Gary, because I don't think the team was there at that time. And had Paddy got it then, I think he possibly would have failed as Mickey Ned did. Mickey Ned did very well to get them to an All-Ireland semi-final against a great Down team in 1991. But I think Paddy was lucky in when he, like, he took charge of a Kerry under 21 team with the likes of Darragh Kinnaird, Liam Hassett, you know, Barry O'Shea, all these young, good footballers. And then he had the likes of Maurice Fitzgerald, Liam O'Flaherty, Seamus Moynihan, all these guys. So he was lucky that he was coming on board with a youthful and experience and that nice blend. And in fairness to him, like, you know, he, after 11 years in the darkness or in the wilderness, they got over the line in 97. So from that point of view, it was great. It was, Dara was on the team my eldest brother Fergal was on the panel up as far as May. He was dropped in May, I think, after the National League. He tore his hamstring off the bone. And funny enough, towards the end of that year, Tomás, the third brother, he was number 24 on the final panel for the game. So there was always the kind of the nepotism was always thrown at us, you know, that Paddy had the boys there because they were the family and the whole lot. So we always felt that we actually had to prove ourselves more to try and get on the team, you know. And as I say, Tomás was there in 97. So he made his debut in 98 in Killarney against Cork. Aidan Dorgan cleaned him out. Paddy got more abuse for that. But eventually Tomás went on to prove himself, I think. And for me then, coming through in, you know, I was late making the breakthrough in 2002. But even then, I felt as though I had to really prove myself to try and get in, more so than, you know. And it was a county championship game against Glenfleske, where I was marking Johnny Crowley, who was an all-star the year before. That kind of cemented the fact that I did well on him. That kind of cemented it, that I had to be brought in. And when I was brought in, then it was about trying to make the team. And, you know, so look, I was lucky enough to be there with Paddy in 2001, 2002, 2003. Then he was gone after that, you know. And he found it hard. He definitely found it hard when he was gone. But thankfully for him, Westmeath was there. And he was able to go up there and really prove himself up there again, you know, and prove the doubters wrong, you know. So from a football point of view, Gary, oh, he was a completely different character. And I think he just had this innate ability to be able to bring everyone together and yes, have fellas singing off the same hymn sheet. And that's a great trait, I think. And, you know, he definitely, I suppose, down through the years, he learned a lot from Mico Dwyer. You know, and he would have carried that through. And, you know, I suppose anyone who wins 8 All-Ireland medals, you know, they must have learned something along the way. And, you know, it's like you said there at the start, it's nearly 10 years. It's like yesterday. And, you know, the one thing I remember when he died, like the one thing that we all spoke about was, you know, the all the stories about Paddy and all of that. Like, I mean, he'll never be gone because his legacy will always live on in terms of, like, the stories. And, like, I meet somebody new every day and there's a new story you'd hear about Paddy and fantastic stuff. Like,
were you close to
him? Very close. You know, we were all very close to him. We, like, the four brothers, we were, you know, and he was like a brother, really. He was like a brother. Mm-hmm. You'd come over and he'd watch the TV and you'd have a bit of cracker. Whatever you'd be doing, you'd always, geez, the laughing. It was constant laughing. It was constant joking, having the crack. Where are we off to now? What are we doing? But yeah, he was great, great fun. He was like, he was always up to something, you know, and like, geez, what a rogue. Like, you know, there was never an end to him. The energy that he had was just endless. He was even with his football tournament. The year that he died, actually, was the football tournament was the biggest that it ever was. Usually it started off with something like four teams in 1988. And I think the year that he died, I think there was something like 34 or 35 teams. So like what he would do then, like he would go off and he'd, sure, this was great for him because the winter months, obviously
not as profitable, I wouldn't imagine, as the summer months for the pub.
Exactly. So any excuse for Paddy to go up the country to have a few pints, you know, and he'd start his program there around the month of November, and he'd be going up meeting all the teams, and any excuse for a few pints and a piss up, and he'd start around November, and like it would take November, December, and January to have everything in place for the month of February, and. Come the month of February, then you'd have thousands and thousands of people flocking to West Kerry. And it was great for the Dingle Peninsula because all the hotels, the B&Bs, the pubs, every place was full. And like usually it's not until Paddy's Day that the tourists start coming down our way again. But every place was full. And sure, as a result of that, everyone loved him as well, you know, because he was putting money in their pockets. But yeah, it was great crack. I remember another day.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, there was another day. The famous Martin Sheen came into the pub. And
before, I'll go on a cut across you. How did he get, I know he had charisma and he had a magnetism, but how did he get Martin Sheen Dolly Parton and Tom Cruise, none of whom, as far as I know, have much of a GAA tradition behind them. How did he persuade those characters to come to his pub?
Well, he hadn't a clue that Martin Sheen was coming to the pub. I know that for a fact. But with Dolly Parton, I think he had heard that she was in the locality, and he put out a few feelers and he made sure she was, you know, he got on to the local politicians and all of that and made sure that she was coming. She was coming back to the pub, and she ended up singing a song. It's on YouTube. It's fantastic. But gave her his Kerry jersey. She puts the Kerry jersey up against her chest. It's very funny when she does that, the reaction of the body. But who else is there? Oh yeah, well, Tom Cruise was filming the movie Far and Away.
Yes.
Shocking movie altogether. But he was filming that movie in West Kerry. He was filming in Ventry, actually. He was living in Ventry at the time, so it was easy enough get him into the pub. But the funny one was Martin Sheen. It was the month of November, and I was off college, and my brother was there as well, and I kind of went to Paddy. Paddy was across the road in the house, and we said, Martin Sheen is in the pub. And he turned around and he said, who the fuck is Martin Sheen, you know? And so, like, we said, Hollywood, Jesus, the West Wing, Paddy. Oh, Jesus Christ, I'll be down in 5 minutes. And goes in the door anyway, and there's only one person inside in the pub, Martin Sheen. Martin, how are you doing? Paddy O'Shea, nice to meet you. You're welcome. And so he really enjoyed his time with him. And there was a photograph of Tom Cruise up in the, and he says, you know Tom? Oh yeah, Tom and myself are personal friends, his party, and he only met him once. So he was larger than life, as I say. He asked him then, he said, would you like a drink? And he said, no, thank you. And he said, look, it isn't every day we have a Hollywood celebrity into the bar. Look, you'll have a drink. He said, oh, no, thank you. I'm an alcoholic. No, thanks. And Paddy said, Christ, no problem. And he turns around to him and he says, yeah, Christ, you'll have one. He says. So, sure, look, you're watching in the background, watching all of this happening. And I'm sure it's great crack. And that's what I'm saying. Look, anytime you were in Paddy's company, there was always great crack and great fun and laughter. And sure, he'll always live on when you've stories like that, you know.
How much did the defeats at the end of his time, the Meath one in 01, the Armagh one in 02, Tyrone in 03, you were there then, you were in the dressing room, and you would have seen the after effects of those defeats on Paddy. Did they weigh heavy on him?
Oh, they did, yeah. Like, I mean, I remember I was a sub, I was only a young fella in 2001 when Meath hammered us, and like, you were going from an area where Kerry were All-Ireland champions, trying to retain their crown in playing Meath in an All-Ireland semi-final. And like, the Kerry supporters were leaving after, oh God, for 50 minutes leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, we just never showed up. It was shocking. And like, then I know that Paddy wanted to put it right. Funny enough, 2002 was the year where in my whole career, and if I go from 01 to 16, spanning 16 years, the best football that we ever played on any Kerry team that I was ever on was that 2002 team. We lost the Munster final in 2002 to Cork. The following Tuesday, my dad passed away. So then, like, the replay against Cork, sorry, we drew with Cork in the drawn game. And then the following Tuesday, my dad passed away. So then we had the replay the following Saturday. And meanwhile, you know, we're going through all of this, and we played in the replay on the Saturday night. And that was tough going. And in fairness to Paddy, you know, he was trying to keep the whole thing together, having buried his brother and, you know, obviously our dad and three of us playing. So it was tough going. And I've never seen a manager so committed after we lost that game. It was as though he was on a mission to get us over the line. And if you go back to that year, we played Wicklow, we who played Fermanagh, who played Kildare. And look, I know you could say they were weaker teams, say the Wicklows at the time and Fermanagh at the time, but they were the games that we needed to kind of get the rhythm going again. And we got it going again. And then we played Kildare, and there was a bit of an edge that game because obviously Mikko was in charge of Kildare. And obviously Mikko was in charge of Kildare in 98 when Kildare beat Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. So there was a bit of an edge that game. We beat them. And then we beat the All-Ireland champions Galway in the quarter-final, which was a big one. And we knew we were kind of going well then. We were outstanding against Galway in that quarter-final. And then the semi-final against Cork, who had beaten us in the replay, we beat them. So then the All-Ireland final against Armagh, played very good football in the first half, went in 4 points up at halftime. And then, unfortunately, you know, that goal from Oisín McConville gave Armagh the momentum and we left them back into the game. But look, Armagh went out and took the game off us, you know. But, you know, that would have been a huge regret. And I know Paddy, that hurt Paddy really hard. But I thought he was outstanding after that game. You know, his interviews after that game where he spoke about Armagh and the torture that they had gone through, you know, in Northern Ireland, living with the troubles and all of that. And I think he came out with a famous quote that, you know, whatever amount of years of troubles came out in that 35 minutes. And they used it to their advantage. And that was one thing that we always learned from Paddy, how glorious he was in victory and gracious in defeat. And geez, there was no better man, I suppose, in that position. And again, I suppose the disappointing thing then was in 2003 when we lost heavily to Tyrone in the semi-final.
The Puke football day.
Yeah, like I think Paddy didn't help himself with the effing animals comment, you know.
That was the previous Christmas, wasn't
previous,
it?
Yeah. So I don't think he probably helped himself, and maybe his cards were numbered after that, possibly, you know. But like from that point of view, he got the road then, and like it was just the ground was taken from under him, and he got an awful fright, and we got a fright too, because we obviously wanted to kind of try and make things right because we felt we had a team that could do it. And it was tough. It was tough for all of us because, you know, he was our uncle. We loved him, and now all of a sudden he was gone, and he was passionate. And look, Jack came in and won the All-Ireland anyway. So look, I mean, from a Kerry point of view, everything went well, you know. But obviously Paddy was hurting after that, and it took him a while, I think, to get over that, you know.
It's funny you say that, because almost immediately after Kerry, he goes to Westmeath. I'm living in Westmeath. He is revered here.
Yeah.
The people absolutely adore him for what he did in 04. It's nothing short of sprinkling magic dust over those players, making them believe. It's the only Leinster title Westmeath have ever won, and Paddy gets them over the line. Now, in the last pod, you were explaining really eloquently about the Kerry way and how Paddy would define the Kerry way or explain. Westmeath didn't have, the players didn't have the confidence that Kerry players would have had. What did he do to convince them that they were good enough?
He just gave them belief, because he went up there knowing the talent that they had. They won the under-21 All-Ireland in 1999. You had the likes of the Desi Dolans, the John Keens, the Shocknessys, and then you had the likes of the Rory Brennan. You know, you'd all these fantastic footballers up there at the time. And I think what he did do then was, there was one or two players, quality players, I think, who may have felt that they were, had a God-given right to be on the team, without mentioning any names, and maybe weren't buying into the whole team effort. Paddy got rid of them, just got rid of them. And I think that sent a kind of a message to the team. And I know that for a fact, because I spoke to Desi Dolan about that, you know, and it sent a message to the team. And it kind of, I think the team knew after that this is for real, this is serious stuff here. And, you know, he used to always have a kind of a phrase himself that Mick O'Dwyer used to always say, that when you could hear the cuckoo, you know, that was championship mode. And when Paddy was in championship mode, by God, like, everything was just regimental and made sure that everything was in order and that the sessions were enjoyable and you know, the football was at the core. And I think that, you know, you could see it in their style of play that year. You could see it in the way they were playing. They were playing with belief and they were playing a good brand of football. And they were possibly lucky the first day against Laois. But with any team that wins, you need that bit of luck and got over the line the second day. And, you know, funny enough, I think maybe obviously winning the first Leinster ever in their history would have possibly given, you know, rise for loads of celebrations. Had they knuckled down properly for the Derry match, they possibly would have made a semi-final, you know, and would have been playing Kerry again. But obviously, you know, winning Leinster was the pinnacle and was huge, and I suppose was the reason why Paddy was up there, and he did achieve his goal up there. And I suppose he showed those people, I suppose, that the doubters or whatever, you know, you might want to call them, but he was, and I'll never forget, like, that was the Sunday, the Leinster, or the Saturday, the Leinster final replay. There was huge celebrations in Mullingar on the Saturday and the Sunday. And Paddy was down home in Ventry on Sunday. He was just out of the limelight. He just wanted to be home amongst his own crew. He'd obviously achieved what he wanted to achieve, but came home. He was probably planning for the quarter final already, you know. But it was a huge achievement, and Paddy loved the Westmeath people. Had great affection for the Westmeath people, and the Westmeath people obviously had great affection for Paddy. And it's, you know, even you go down to the grave now and you see loads of people putting bunting, and the amount of Westmeath bunting that's on his grave, and it's fantastic to see.
Final one before I let you go. How was he in the dressing room, Mark, before the biggest games? Was he the sort of guy that could make you believe, or what did he have that made him such a good manager?
Well, this is it. I mean, if I was looking for anyone to be in a dressing room before a game, it's Paddy. Because he'd make the hair stand up in the back of your neck. He'd make you want to go out and go through the wall. You go through the wall for him. And there's very few managers that you'd actually do that for. And Paddy was one of those fellas. And, you know, you talk to the 97 team in particular, and you talk to the likes of Seamus Mina, and you talk to Barry O'Shea, you talk to all these players that played on that team, the Hassetts, you know, all these guys, and all they talk about is Paddy. And because I think he had a huge influence on them. And I know from my time, and I go back to that year 02, that was the main year. He just, you know, when he spoke, you listened, you were just ready to go through the wall. And that was one of the big things. And our team meetings night before, when you'd be doing your video analysis, going through the opposition, he would always just hit the right note. And he would always just give you an angle that maybe a bit of motivation that you could use to get you over the line the following day. And that was something that served me well throughout my career after. I always tried to use that angle where it could be anything. Maybe something that you heard maybe a year previous about what they thought of this Kerry team or whatever it was. But you'd always try and use that angle. And that was something that I always felt. And he was such a proud Kerry man then on top of it. You know, he just wanted Kerry to get over the line. He wanted us to play in the Kerry way, which was that style of football where you could win your ball. You'd look up, you'd give the ball to the man in the best position. You'd all the skills, you could kick left, right. He used to love, and he used to always finish trainings on a high. If there was a nice passage of play, and Paddy's style of play was, you'd build from the back, you'd move the ball, kicking the ball through the lines. Before you know it, you know, you'd have three or four balls kicked and the ball would be over the bar. And he'd always finish a session on a high. If it was a goal or a point, he'd never finish a session with a wide or a ball that trickled over the end line that should have gone. It'd always be finished on a positive, which I'll always remember him for. But look, it was his style, and he just had you, you know, and he had this, as I say, this innate ability to be able to get fellas eating out of the palm of his hand. And, you know, it's a great, it's, I suppose it's a hard thing. you either have it or you don't. But I think he was born to manage, certainly so, because he just had that ability. And I think he had a passion for it. And I think if you have a passion for something, you know, the sky's the limit.
Brilliantly put, Mark, about a brilliant manager, a brilliant fella, and obviously a brilliant uncle for you as well.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? When you say the 10 years, as I say, it is like yesterday. And I know we're going for the anniversary mass is in a few weeks, and we're all going to meet up afterwards and have a bite of grub and maybe a few pints afterwards, you know. And I'm sure there'll be stories flying about Paddy and the mischief that he got up to.
Brilliant stuff. We'll leave it at that. Mark, great chatting to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Great stuff, Gary. Thanks for the chat.